raising its starting pay to $11 an hour. Law says that'll help, but what she'd really like is a full-time job. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today from the Marketplace desk of how, for the love of Pete, does this happen? The official tickets to the State of the Union address tomorrow night. As printed, they say, admit bearer to the address to the Congress for the State of the Union. Union. They're being reprinted.
Marketplace is supported by Fidelity Investments, taking a personalized approach to helping clients grow, preserve, and manage their wealth. Learn more at fidelity.com/wealth. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. And by Moo. Moo helps businesses of all sizes stand out with premium quality print products and human-to-human customer service. Learn more at Moo.com.
Unium. The Dow Industrials off 177 today, 0.6%. The NASDAQ down 39, about 0.5%. S&P 500 dropped 19 points, about 0.6%. Our daily production team includes Bridget Bonner, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. Tommy Andres and Haley Hirschman are the special projects desk. Caitlin Esch is the producer on our wealth and poverty desk. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
This is KTOO Juno.
The Juno World Affairs Council presents World Quest, our annual trivia night dinner and auction fundraiser. Play the game during dinner with your table. Questions cover a wide range of topics and are all multiple choice. Presented by Jesse Keel and Christina Apathy, it's charming, delicious, and fun. You should join us. Centennial Hall, February 2nd at 6 o'clock. Tickets at the door, the Jack, and JWAC.org. See you there.
Hello, Juno. I'm Sarah Lynn Tabachnik, and I'm happy to be here with Mandy Cole and Ati Nasia. What do the three of us have in common? We're Star Awarians. We all work together at Aware, and I think we do very good work together. So I'd like to start this conversation with thinking about how long we've been at Aware and what brought you here.
Well, this is Mandy. I've been at Aware for, a dozen years now.
A dozen.
So I think since 2005. And what brought me here is, I think once you start working with other women doing powerful things, you can't stop. And so I was lucky enough to kind of fall into a job when I lived in Sitka at the shelter there and sampled the magic and then wanted to keep it going. So I decided I'd join my lovely partner over here as soon as the job opened up at Aware. And when one did, and Sarah Lynn Tabachnik hired me, then
how clever of her.
I came right over. So that was 2005, and so that's kind of continued my career of doing everything you can do at a shelter, from cleaning drains to organizing volunteers to corralling children to reaching out to reaching in and trying to try and help make people's lives a little easier, if nothing else. So it's been quite a journey, but my pleasure.
Thank you, Mandy. Ati?
Well, I joined Aware probably about 11 years ago, and I had fallen to the fields in southern Oregon, actually as an AmeriCorps. I didn't know what an AmeriCorps meant, but I saw a job posting to work as part of a sexual assault response team, and I was freshly out of college, and I was very, very moved and inspired, and so the position was a combination of responding primarily to the hospital and supporting victims and survivors after they've experienced the sexual assault, as well as teaching in the local middle schools and high schools healthy relationships curricula. And I fell in love with the field, but not the agency, actually. And it was hard. And so I moved from Oregon to Alaska thinking I was going to take a break after 2 years working in the field. And within about 3 months, started up at Aware, and 11 years later, have also had the honor and privilege of doing many, many jobs at Aware, and deeply in love with the agency and the mission and the sacred circle of sisterhood. And the work that we do as change makers. So I pretty much love Aware 11 years later.
Yay us. Okay. So it's kind of great to hear that, because I think you both spoke about not only what brought you here, but in some ways what keeps you here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wonder if you would be up for speaking about some of the programming. And I don't know if I said your jobs, right? That might be important. Mandy, do you want to begin as your current job as deputy director?
That's right. One of the many is a deputy director. And what is a deputy, you ask? Well, it is certainly a person who does a little bit of everything and nothing fully. So what I've gleaned is that my main job is to really kind of move our programming forward, but also to support our staff. And you know, we all do our work, and we all kind of come to social justice in different ways. And I think my way and my mission is to support survivors of domestic and sexual violence, but also to support the people that support survivors. And so the kind of biggest block of my work, I think, is to work with our staff and to ensure that they have what they need to help other people get what they need. Just like survivors come to us with lots of different kind of strengths and challenges, I think staff do the same thing. That's myself included, and these fine women sitting with me included. We come with lots of things that's our work to work on, so that we can work with other people. And so part of my job and my pleasure at Aware is to help our staff kind of feel their way through those challenges, those triggers, the things that fulfill them and the things that drain them, and try and find balance for those things. And then I also, you know, like, sweep the cars from snow off the cars, or try and get keys made, which is a never-ending process that like Tetris, trying to figure out which key everybody needs, and just kind of mundane things like that. But moving programming forward and moving people forward is kind of how I would characterize my job.
Thanks, Mandy. That's really great and helpful, and I think one of the things that I like to say that I think is true is that our most important relationship is with ourselves, for each of us. And so in your work with advocates and other staff, as you've described it, you've described that, I think.
That's right. It was the part I resisted the most. Thanks to the careful tutelage of Sarah-Lynn Tabachnik, I feel like I have a great relationship with myself. I'm just doing a great job for myself, but also helping other people find that and walk through that themselves, too, because Sarah-Lynn can't do it for everyone, more's the pity.
I think that's my favorite part of Aware, is this frame, and I have witnessed it. I've experienced it individually, and then I witness it amongst the staff that I supervise and work alongside is the sense of transformation that occurs when you work at AWARE. So most often people that come to AWARE come because they have a strong commitment to social justice or equity or, there is a drive, a wholehearted drive that brings someone to walk through the doors to want to be an advocate or a volunteer coordinator within our agency. And that heart, I don't think they have any sense how deep the transformation will be. So they walk in thinking they're there to serve others, and they are. And in the process, they go through an incredible journey of self-growth and of building a healthy relationship with themselves and with those around them, both personally and professionally. And it's just really profound.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So, Ati, as prevention and outreach director, what are you most proud of in your department?
What am I most proud of? Well, when I came to AWARE, the concept of prevention was a budding baby idea. In fact, I think across Alaska and across the nation, people didn't fully understand what primary prevention even meant. So I have had this really unique and special position to kind of watch and grow this idea into a movement across the state. And it's been so healing and inspiring to be a part of both a statewide and a national network of really, both bringing programs to life, but also this belief that violence is preventable, and this commitment to create change across our communities around the incidences and the normalization of violence against women. So that's sort of broad, but it really has been phenomenal. When I came, there wasn't a statewide movement, and now across Alaska, from big cities of Juneau and Anchorage to small villages of Hoonah, there's thriving programming that's lifting and supporting this concept of wellness, particularly around violence prevention.
It's kind of the cool thing about Alaska, right? Like, I'm sitting next to one of the architects of Alaska's prevention movement, and she's awesome, and she's my buddy, but she really changed things,
right?
Which is so cool that we get to be, like, here and doing it, and one or two people can change things, like, for everyone. And
I've had some beautiful mentors,
right,
that have shaped and created this work collectively. And for me, my understanding of prevention 11 years ago is deeply different than what it is today. And when I think about the other reason that AWARE has sustained me and I have sustained AWARE, it's that the flexibility and the fluidity to continue to work through the layers of the work and of service and of social justice and come to new understandings and to try them out and to fail and to succeed and to keep trying and to work collectively in co-creating vision and programs with volunteers and community professional partners and colleagues. It's pretty awesome.
It's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah.
When Jeff invited me to do this show, and I said yes, and he said, you can interview anybody you want. And I wanted to interview both of you because you have done outstanding, inspirational, groundbreaking things at AWARE and for the state. And I want people to hear about it. And also, it is, I think, the magic that happens at AWARE, the camaraderie, the mentorship, the sisterhood, call it what you will. But we really support and uplift each other so that we can do this work. And it's a pleasure for me to hear your ideas.
Do you remember a long time ago, I wanted to do something different, some take programming in some different direction. And I said, I just need to do something different. And you're like, there are lots of problems associated with domestic violence. I'm sure you can do something different. And it's really true. There's lots of problems. And, you know, an almost endless kind of, when you have permission to kind of think big about all of the nuance of all of those problems, you can come up with some, like, beautiful and wacky and difficult and just amazing strategies that you and your sisters can implement. But it like made me so happy in a way to think you could spend your life working on one thing and know it in 1,000 different ways. And so, you know, I think nowadays a lot of times people move from career to career because they get that restless feeling.
Right.
But one of the kind of beauties of AWARE and of what we do together is that that restless feeling is put to work, like every day on some new facet of a problem associated with the stuff we do every day. So it's never boring. It's never routine. It's never the same because we think about it different. And we're encouraged to think about it different, depending on who's in front of us and who's beside us and, you know, what day of the week it is and who's in leadership and who is most disadvantaged. And, you know, we spend a lot of time looking at it from 1,000 different directions so that we can keep trying new things.
And then the work is endlessly growing and changing and transforming based on that.
Right. And we never get bored. And we never have it totally done. But we always have some part of it figured out. You know, that's the other thing that's great. Taking on a big problem like violence, like we figure out little bits of it every day. You know, it's not an unknowable thing. We can know it, and we do know some of it. So that's the part we work on that day.
And I think, you know, in my department, and I don't know, maybe it's true across, but for sure when it comes to this concept of prevention, I think when I look back over the last 11 years, as much has been learned by what has been effective and transformative, as well as what didn't work. And so taking all of these lessons from things that, you know, we're holding this belief that violence is a learned behavior. It's 100% preventable, and we are dedicated to ending violence. And so over the last years, we've tried some things that seem to have lifted and been transformative, and other things that sure didn't. And both have been equally helpful on that big journey. So to me, within that is sort of permission to be brave and to be wholehearted and to be authentic with what I know when I know it and to give it my all and then to learn and to keep growing.
I'm Sarah Lynn Tabachnik here with Mandy Cole, AWARE's Deputy Director, and Atina Sia, AWARE's Prevention and Outreach Director. We're going to take a break and be back and hear about the innovations currently at AWARE.
He said it's my fault that he had to get so angry. My fault that he hit me when he did. My fault, and I just had to learn my lesson for making him so angry that he had to treat me bad. I never understood what I did to make him hate me. I never understood how to keep his temper calm. We had such good times in between his anger, even though the calm was just before another storm. He hit me on the back so nobody else would see it. He hit me on my head so the bruise would not be seen. One time on the street he knocked me down and started pounding, and the cars just kept driving by, no one seemed to see. He said it's my fault that he had to get so angry. My fault that he hit me when he did. My fault, I just had to learn my lesson for making him so angry that he had to treat me bad. He always said I'm sorry, I won't ever treat you badly again. Why do you make me blow up this way?
quiet times between the storms came fewer in between. The reasons for exploding just made less sense every day. I don't know what kept me from telling friends about it. I always hoped that love would find a way to calm him down. I knew my friends would say, don't be a fool, why don't you leave him? And I didn't know how to explain I needed him around. He said, it's my fault that he had to get so angry. My fault that he hit me when he did. My fault, I just had to learn my lesson for making him so angry that he had to treat me bad. I knew I couldn't raise my children with this man of violence. I knew I loved him underneath, but still I couldn't stay. The hardest thing I did was leave the man I loved behind. But I knew that the cost was worth the price to pay. Cause it was his fault, that he always got so angry. His fault, that he chose to act that way. His fault, it was always his decision to use his fist instead of words. There was nothing I could say. To use his fist instead of words, there was nothing I could say.
Hi, Sarah Lynn Tabatsnik is me. I'm the Executive Director of AWARE. I'm here with Mandy Cole and Atina Sia, two of AWARE's directors, and they are prepared to talk about recent innovations.
Shall I go first? All right, thank you. One of the things I wanted to talk about today is, you know, something that I think Juno's been talking about for a couple of months now, which is our gender inclusive shelter. And I've gotten, let's say, lots of feedback via, you know, some direct emails and questions, which have been wonderful. And then, you know, also just social media stuff on what Juno and the state of Alaska and people think about gender inclusive sheltering. And partly, I think it's my responsibility to talk a little bit more about what, where, and why. So several months ago, well, really over a year ago.
Over a year.
A long time ago. I spent some time with some really smart folks who were teaching me about kind of some non-discrimination stuff that had come out of the Obama administration. And learning about what it means to really be gender inclusive, and how programming that separates men and women, sometimes for some people who don't identify kind of clearly as man or woman, or female or male, it forces them to make a choice in order to get services. And in that forcing of somebody to make a choice, we often are kind of devaluing their experience. And part of what really made me consider this very deeply is we at AWARE get phone calls about people who are in crisis all the time and all over the place. So sometimes it could be a student in school. Sometimes it could be a counselor from a rural village. It could be someone, a neighbor who lives down the street. It could be someone I had coffee with earlier as a friend who then calls AWARE and, you know, needs some help with something tricky that's going on in their personal life. And so we've noticed over the past year that we've been getting a few more phone calls from people who are experiencing harm due to the fact that they have gender identity or expression that in some way doesn't line up with how they present, or you know, the world kind of wants them to be a certain way, wants them to fit into a certain box, and they don't. And so for those people, I think there are not a lot of resources that are close, not like close like AWARE is close. You can show up, you can call, and that experience of being able to talk to somebody one-on-one about what's happening in your life and the harm that you're experiencing, even if you're not sure kind of how to characterize it yet. Most of the people that call AWARE don't call and say, I've been abused in XYZ ways. They call and describe a behavior and say, I don't know what to think about this. I'm really confused or I'm really upset. And so kind of working with folks whose gender was part of that equation, it definitely prompted me to think, are we, you know, unintentionally enforcing some of those boxes, some of those ways that people have to classify themselves that don't feel comfortable or don't feel right, but they need to do it in order to get something, to get a service, to sign a paper, to check a box on a form, et cetera, et cetera. And so what we did was really undertake a long process of study and survey and understanding how AWARE could change to help specifically those people who don't have anywhere else to turn or don't have as many places to turn. And so one of the ways that we considered and ultimately implemented was to make our shelter a shelter for survivors of domestic and sexual violence rather than a shelter for women or people who identify as female who have had experienced domestic or sexual violence. So that means that transgender men, men who are in relationship with other men who are in relationship with women, women who are in relationship with women, all of these people don't have to kind of pre-guess and pre-judge whether or not they will be welcome to walk in our doors. They just get to know that they will. And, you know, the price of that has been that some people maybe are not sure what this move means for AWARE, but I'm here to tell you very clearly that it is a good thing. It is a right thing because what it does is really allow people to be who they are and access services based on that versus trying to guess what will get them what they need in order to be safe. And so AWARE has always been dedicated to safety. And so if opening our doors a little wider helps more people be able to pass through or think that they can pass through, which is really the barrier, right? We were always incredibly welcoming and supportive, but it's just a question of, did you know we were going to be that way? And so my hope is with gender-inclusive sheltering that people now know that, you know, however you identify, you can use AWARE for what it was intended. It's a safe space to talk about what's going on for you and to be who you are and to think about safety strategies that work individually for you and not just, you know, for others or for people who aren't like you or for people who know and call themselves female, but for anyone who needs help in that way. So I think gender-inclusive sheltering kind of, for me, represents the next step in our advocacy for women, for people who identify as trans, for people who are gender nonconforming, for men, for people who identify as male. I mean, I think this is a next step for advocacy for so many of us. And, you know, I'm really proud that we took this step, even though it was a little out of the box itself. and not everybody was on board. But one of my dear friends, Jordan Negro, said, if you go first,
they will follow.
You have to be ready. Going first is a responsibility. And I think I really appreciated that advice. And so, yeah, that it's been a journey, but I think it's been one that was well worthwhile.
Yeah, it's been a beautiful journey that you have championed, Mandy, and really worked with staff, worked with the community, worked with AWARE residents, worked with AWARE stakeholders, you know, ensuring a strong foundation and strong support so that we could serve people in the best way possible, answering any questions or anything people might have so that we could be thinking about everything that might impact how we provided services. Yeah.
Thank you.
No, thank you. But really, you know, I think about AWARE serving marginalized people already and more marginalized than more, and, you know, like, it's beautiful.
Well, and the harm comes from the same place, you know, and that's really why I think we, this was such an easy philosophical step for me personally, is to recognize that the harm still comes from that kind of well of oppression that wants, you know, women to act like women and men to act like men, and not to cross any of those borders. And if you do, you get put back into those, into that box, usually with violence or with some kind of emotional coercion, something like that. And so recognizing that you can't fully address violence against women without addressing those beliefs on the, on that entire spectrum, you know, that might have been the final piece of the puzzle for me to understand that there's no solving this. There's no making women safer without making everybody safer.
Right. Thanks, Mandy. Ati Nasia. It's a perfect segue, isn't it?
Yeah. I think on the prevention side, similar conclusions. So where we stand in 2018 is really a deepened commitment to sexism and racism. Sexism and really looking at the intersections of oppression and understanding that we're never going to prevent domestic violence or sexual assault or violence against women if we're not looking at those root causes, and those root causes lead us back to patriarchy and to colonization and racism. And so some of the work of our department and the Juno Violence Prevention Coalition is increasing our own awareness and understanding and the subtleties of power and privilege and difference, and also recognizing that we are gatekeepers to systems and that we have to create institutional level changes around these beliefs of patriarchy and racism to have any impact on safety for women and children. And so one of the projects we've been working on, we actually have been going through a journey in-house at AWARE called Racial Equity and Liberation, and we're also offering a series of conversations and dialogues with the larger community. And the concept of liberation is that it is a process, and it's about increasing tools for practicing liberation on the spot, recognizing that we all want to be joyful. We want to rest in our cultures and our histories, and we want to connect with each other, and we have to learn how to have these hard conversations to understand each other more deeply and to create change around these systems of oppression, and understanding that systems of oppression are meant to disconnect us from our source and disassociate us from our bodies, distance us from our emotions, and really distort stories so that one story is the dominant story, harming and impacting the complexity of people's individual stories and individuality. So the work that we've been doing is about how to help ourselves and each other reconnect with our source. And so that's about, for some people's sources, culture or family or the earth, or sense of spirit, those things that give you sense of connection to your inner strength, reclaiming your body. You know, we know from working with women that have experienced trauma that that disassociation is a response to traumatic experiences, and that we find healing as we come back into our bodies. And that's how we create change. Re-engaging our emotions, our fears, our angers, our rage, and creating safe spaces for that. And then restoring the complexities of our stories and our sisters and brothers' stories and the stories that have been erased and silenced and within our own community and beyond. And so for me, I feel like every day I'm learning and gaining insights around my own sort of blind, implicit biases and
my understanding of the world changes the more that I connect deeply with others and share and listen. The ultimate goal is not just about that self-transformation, but about really recognizing that whether we approve or disapprove of patriarchy and colonization, these systems are what we have inherited, and each of us work within institutions and systems that are going to perpetuate inequities unless we're actively working to dismantle, transform, and change them. And the power that each of us have as gatekeepers to our family, to our friends, to the place that we work, to begin to create change to those systems. So that this world is safer, so that all people can have the respect and love that that they are worthy of. So it feels complex and layered, and I personally feel like I'm in the midst of a lot of learning as I go, and I'm deeply grateful for this frame and this orientation to our work, because it feels so true and important.
You've both spoken about work one-on-one as well as work in the community, work on a bigger scale, you know, looking at a big oppression, patriarchy, colonialism, and again, the one-on-one. So we're looking on many levels and working on many levels, it seems like. Can we talk a little bit? Can you tell a little bit about day-to-day, what services are we providing at AWARE?
Sure. I think, we offer a really broad spectrum of services, and some people dip their toe in, and some people jump right into the deep end of services at AWARE. And so I think you know, there's a little bit there for everyone who needs it. And I truly mean everyone, because, you know, I have beautiful, healthy, wonderful children who sometimes need to be at AWARE, because what they find there is a different kind of love and acceptance. You know, it's a different kind of family environment than what you might create in your home. But it is people who are, like, working together through hard stuff. And they, you know, hold on even when it really is terrible. And that's a, you know, it's a kind of nice way to confirm that you are a human and you are connected. And that even when you feel alone, you can kind of develop and, you know, feel this kind of strength and connectedness, whether you're living in our shelter because you don't have another place to live or the place you lived was not safe. It could be that you are connected legally to someone that has harmed you, and so you need some help to try and figure out how to pull apart two people's lives that are often kind of enmeshed in lots of ways, and so you might need an attorney to do that, or someone who is attorney adjacent. We have lots of those. We have children's programming, so we have counselors and advocates whose job and passion it is to kind of, you know, open up children so that they can really see what it's like to have someone who wants to know about them and who has time and energy to just focus on what they want and what they need, which is something that even, you know, like I said, I have these great kids, but, you know, sometimes I'm not listening to them. So just this weekend I told my daughter, like, I think probably Sarah Lynn would have a better perspective on this than I do. It's truly, you know, it's relying on the people who are with you in this journey to kind of contribute their own special brand of assistance and love and connection. And so, you know, there are advocates that help people, you know, figure out where they want to live next or what kind of job that they can do, or just we'll have a cup of tea with them at night if they wake up and have a nightmare. There are, you know, someone's there to answer the phone 24 hours a day, which is a pretty invaluable service, really. There are very few of us who can answer the phone 24 hours a day.
Right.
So the fact that we all share that and that responsibility and that and the honor of being the person on the other end of the line when you are in trouble, that's a pretty big deal. We have men who act as mentors and who help other men learn this complicated kind of interplay of accountability and responsibility for what they're thinking and ways to be allies to the women in their lives. We have a wonderful facility that's full of light, and we welcome in people from the community who can have meetings with us and who can be in connection with us and partner with us in ways that some ways that are pretty predictable. You know, we have lots of relationships with mental health providers and substance abuse treatment providers, but then we also have lots of relationships with people who you might not think of who also can offer assistance. So we kind of offer a place to gather and a place to for everyone to kind of show their particular talent for the good of the rest of Juno, which is pretty helpful.
That's great. Thanks, Mandy. I think, sometimes people call AWARE with various and sundry questions, concerns, not necessarily knowing should they be calling AWARE. And we think you should be calling AWARE. And if there's someone who can serve you better, we will send you to that agency or person or reference librarian. AWARE's phone number is 907-586-1090, 24/7, confidential services. You don't have to give us your name. You can just call and talk to someone if you're concerned about your safety or someone else's, or had something confusing happen that you want to talk about or help figuring it out. Give a call. Speak to an advocate. Thanks.
It is really incredible the range and scope. I'm just thinking about being on that receiving end and picking up the phone from, a man who's calling because he's worried about his behavior with his girlfriend, and he's wanting to understand how to communicate in ways that are less controlling and more respectful, to a grandmother who's worried about her grandchild a town away, to a friend of a friend. I mean, there's just this incredible range, and being on that receiving end, you get to witness so much heart and so much care coming from the community and people really looking out for each other and looking out for themselves and trying to navigate difficult and complex things. And it is so amazing that 24/7 you can call, whether it's for you or someone else. It's a pretty special, it's a special thing.
Yeah. So, Ati, before you tell us what's happening with prevention, let's take a break. We have a song I can announce. Since I missed the other song by Shanti Elder, this is Suzanne Vega, Luca.
Second floor.
Here with two other Awareians, Mandy Cole and Ati Nasia. Ati's about to talk to us a little bit about what's happening in the prevention side of things.
Thank you. Our prevention programs, some of them are held really closely at Aware, by Aware, and some of our programs are held by other Juno Violence Prevention Coalition member agencies. Some of our programming is really focused on engaging men and boys. Because we have this vision that violence is preventable, we know and understand that it will never be prevented if we aren't standing shoulder to shoulder, working with men, and unlearning the impacts of patriarchy and men's entitlement. And so some of our work really is about peeling back those layers and supporting men in doing that. So one of the programs is our Men at Work program. It's a 26-week class for men who are interested in learning to become accountable for controlling or abusive behaviors. And men that want to become allies in the movement of men ending violence against women.
I hear there's a really great primary facilitator of that program.
There is an amazing facilitator. His name is Richard Cole.
Oh, yes. That's right.
It's a point that Aware is very excited and proud of. For the first time ever, we have men holding leadership for facilitation, and we have more men that are being trained in holding that facilitation because we really we know that we need men to take on this issue because it is their issue. And so to see that happening in our community and with your amazing husband has been an awesome gift, and it's been really meaningful to Aware because it's for almost 10 years, Aware has been facilitating a batter intervention program. So working with men that have committed acts of violence against their partner and are court ordered to attend this program. And so to have other men in the stream navigating, unlearning, and reteaching and rethinking about control, about violence, about men's role in this work is really significant.
I think that, you know, the nice thing I think that that I learned when I worked in that program, we call it the Juno Choice and Accountability Program, or Men at Work, is that we are all connected, and we all do swim in the same stream. Just like you said, we all grew up in the same soup, and we all learned things that we have to examine and choose to either hold on to or to let go. And so it really takes away kind of that false dichotomy of us and them, of, you know, that there are good and bad, that there are people who are just perpetrators and victims of violence. We've all been through so much, and people are complicated. And one of my mentors once told me that was a lazy way to say it, which I absolutely appreciated. But he was right in that it's worth exploring the ways that you're connected to violence in our culture and the ways that you want to change. Because without that really hard, deep work of accountability, you can't just stop it. We joke sometimes when we get a phone call from a well-meaning person or a media person who says, well, you know, how are we going to end domestic violence? And we say, well, we're just going to stop it, right? Just stop it. Stop doing it. Which is kind of part of the answer. But of course, the practice of stopping it means figuring out why you're doing it, and what you get from it. And those are uncomfortable conversations. And so not only the people who work at AWARE and the people who get services from AWARE, but also the people who work in our violence prevention program and the people who work in our choice and accountability program are asking and answering those questions all of the time. No one of us has answered it, and we're done. Like, we don't get to do that. And so, you know, I think you see that kind of play out really beautifully in the Men at Work program, because the facilitators, the participants, the people connected with the program, the friends and family of all of these people, whether they're their partners or their mothers or their brothers, they're all asking the same questions. You know, like, how can we figure out how to undo this so that you can be well and I can be well and the people who love us can be well. And so, you know, knowing that it's a dynamic process means we have to put a lot into it all of the time.
We talked about earlier the journey at AWARE is often one of transformation, both for yourself and then also as you do that work of transforming yourself, that manifests in, you know, your workplace, your family relations, et cetera. And my experience at Men at Work is that it holds that really true, whether there is no good and bad out there. There are complex human beings, and we all have the work and responsibility, again, to recognize we've all been impacted by racism and sexism, and we've all learned a lot of things that we need to unlearn, and we're all accountable and responsible for who we are, what we do with our privilege or lack thereof, and how we create positive change for ourselves, our partners, our community. So,
you know, I was thinking, because I was talking to my teenage daughter about relationships the other day, and I think unlearning something is one thing, but unfeeling something. Mm. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a way we have a connection with things like, I mean, in one sense, violence, because we like to watch movies about them, and, you know, revenge feels good, and there's certain kind of feelings that go along with some kinds of violence. But also, you know, this idea that jealousy in some way feels good, or it feels appropriate as part of love. And so, you know, it would be one thing to unlearn something. It's another thing to kind of unfeel it. And I think we do go through that process of trying to understand why we feel things. And it's unfeeling isn't quite the right word, but the idea is that understanding those feelings enough so that you can use your brain to override some of that stuff that we've inherited, that's a really hard thing to do.
I'd like to call that healing.
This is the difference between Asitasia and Nicole. I call it unfeeling.
I call it healing. The journey of healing
is powerful. It's really important. that is so hard.
And it's hard.
So hard to watch it play out with someone else. I mean, I think I have a feeling we're talking to both people who have had these experiences for themselves and then people like us who also have children and family and friends who are going through tough times. And sometimes it's so hard to watch and to be witness to. That, you know, those kind of, all of those phone calls we were talking about earlier, lots of them are people who are just witness to this kind of human condition playing out and just don't know what to make of it.
Yeah.
And so we luckily have found a way, I think, to deal with some of that by doing the work. And there might be this kind of false assumption that if you're not working at AWARE, you can't do the work. And so I know that Ati has lots of ways that you can do the work without necessarily working in AWARE, although if you want to, you're more than welcome to come on. Come on down.
In fact, we are hiring.
Yeah, you car salesman.
That's your guess. No, the work happens every breath, every day, every moment. We have options around how we both build a healthy relationship with ourselves and work as change makers across our community. So I'm going to get less philosophical and talk a little more about some other programming. So we have the Men at Work program, and we're also really wanting to invite and encourage men that feel drawn to take on leadership around men working to end violence against women to come and connect with us. We have some increasing leadership opportunities from facilitating the Men at Work class to standing with AWARE and tabling and beyond. But we really do feel and know that we're never going to create a shift around men's violence if men don't help change the norms around men's violence. Some of our other programs, well, one of my favorites is Girls on the Run.
It's so much fun.
Girls on the Run is so much fun. Yeah. We are in our 10-year anniversary with Girls on the Run.
Wow.
Girls on the Run, we envision a world where every girl knows and activates her limitless potential to boldly pursue her dreams.
Wow.
Activates.
Whoa.
Girls on the Run is an empowerment program, after-school program for girls 3rd through 8th grade. And we started Girls on the Run. We brought Girls on the Run to Alaska, right here in Juneau. And we've had programs in every elementary school, and now we have spread across the state of Alaska. So we have become Girls on the Run of Greater Alaska and have programs in Onalaska and Haines and all over the state, really helping girls to build positive self-confidence, self-esteem, positive body image to lift them up, teach them to set a goal, how to work towards that goal, and then the power of accomplishing that goal, which for this program is running a 5K, but we also believe that that can be transferred across. So empowerment programs for girls, we have a coaches training. We always have coaches trainings coming up. Okay. And then we also have some programs for youth and youth leadership opportunities. So Sources of Strength is an amazing program in both of our high schools here in Juneau. We're hosting a Be the Change, which is going to be a one-day conference focused on racial and gender equity for all of the high schools coming up in March.
You've done that before, right?
We have. This is going to be the third time we've hosted Be the Change. Yeah. And then I talked a little bit earlier about our commitment to address sexism and racism. And so we're also working to increase conversations and resources for agencies and individuals who are interested in becoming change makers when it comes to addressing issues of sexism and racism. And so that's some of the work that we have going on with the Juneau Violence Prevention Coalition and AWARE's Prevention Department.
Thanks. And if people are interested, they can call Prevention Office.
Mm-hmm.
You have your own phone number, right?
Yeah, 586-4902 is AWARE's Prevention phone number.
Thank you.
Not 24/7, but during business hours.
Right. Because myself listening to both of you, I feel very inspired. And it occurs to me that listeners may also feel inspired. And maybe there are some activists who want to volunteer at AWARE or who are interested in more programming or just want to interview you further.
Activate their limitless potential.
Well, then give a ring.
Yes, please feel free to call us at AWARE, 907-586-6623. We've tossed out a few phone numbers. Please feel free to call.
The secret is that most of them go to the same exact place. So you can choose any one of your liking.
Yeah, it's sort of magical how that happens. Very magical. Are there any, we have only a couple more minutes, and I wonder if there's anything else you would like to say or share or final something before I give a thank you to Jeff Brown. Our engineer this hour.
Well, I want to say thank you, of course, to Sarah Lynn Tabachnik and to AWARE for being the place that it is and full of heart and love. And then also just to say, you know, a lot of times people ask me, like, isn't your work kind of hard? Like, oh, thank you for doing that. It seems very hard. And they say it in very careful, soft voice. But that we are so grateful to be trusted with this work and continue to be grateful. And so thank you, everyone, for that trust.
A pleasure. Ati, anything?
Just maybe in the same vein, just to acknowledge our community partners that have co-created many of these programs with us. And my experience at AWARE is that it takes all of us working together, doing whatever our piece is in this puzzle of ending violence. And so grateful to be working together.
Yes, so thank you, our community. K2, the woman I love, who I'm sitting here with, Ati, Mandy. Thank you, Jeff Brown.
Wandering and fragmented, or carefully prepared.
Finally, the chorus became an earthquake, and the people turned out by the tens of millions, and they were all united by one very simple but crucial demand.
We ask what Trump's speeches have in common as we prepare for the State of the Union tomorrow on Morning Edition.
Starting 4 a.m. weekdays on KTOO.